This episode is sponsored by Lifeway Kefir. Lifeway Kefir is responsible for those delicious little dairy drinks that you can find in the dairy aisle of your local grocery store. And if you listen to this podcast, you'll know that I recently discovered their list of yummy recipes on their website. And today I want to recommend their maca almond butter smoothie, because who doesn't like a delicious smoothie? Made with maca, rich almond butter, and their plain kefir, it's definitely a treat that you don't want to miss. Go to their website, lifewaykefir.com/courtjunkie, and get an exclusive coupon just for you court junkies. That's Lifeway, KEFIR.com/courtjunkie.
Killing my mother. And as evil as that may sound, that's my reality.
Hi, I'm Jillian, and you are listening to episode 15 of the Court Junkie podcast. Before we get started with today's episode, I want to thank all of you for your support. Thank you for listening, subscribing, leaving me a reviews, sharing with your friends, and even donating to this podcast. I'm really grateful for all of your support. If you haven't already, please consider joining our Court Junkie discussion group on Facebook. We talk about interesting court cases, true crime documentaries, and a whole lot more. It's an awesome little community for those of us who like that sort of thing. Just go to courtjunkie.com/Facebook, and that will link you right to the group. And now, on to today's episode. It was August 12th, 2014. At 11:26 a.m., 19-year-old Heather Mack and her boyfriend, 21-year-old Tommy Schaefer, were wheeling their luggage out to the front of the beachfront St. Regis Hotel in Bali, where they had been vacationing with Heather's mother, Sheila Van Wees Mack. The hotel was one of the most exclusive hotels in Bali, with its suites and private villas, white sand beach, and 24-hour butler service. A bellboy stopped and asked if they needed help with their luggage, but Tommy quickly told him no, and just asked him to get them a taxi. Another staff member walked over, and she noticed something odd about Heather's suitcase. The suitcase had been wrapped in a hotel sheet, with duct tape helping to keep it closed, and it appeared to have red splotches on it. She asked Heather what the splotches were, and Heather replied that they were just makeup stains. Tommy and Heather walked outside and approached the taxi. Tommy loaded the suitcases into the trunk and then told the driver that they would be right back, that they still had to check out. So the taxi driver waited and waited and waited, but the couple never came back out. In fact, they seemed to have just vanished from the property. The driver went over to the trunk of the car and looked at the suitcases. He noticed that one was wrapped in a sheet and appeared to be leaking what looked like blood. He showed some of the hotel staff, and they told him that he should take it to the police station to have it checked out. When he got to the police station, officers removed the suitcase from the trunk, and when they opened it, they found the deceased, half-naked body of Heather's mom, Sheila Van Wees Mack, inside. She had been wrapped in a blood-stained bedsheet and stuffed into the suitcase. Meanwhile, Heather and Tommy were long gone from the resort. They exited through the back. Just prior to bringing out their bags, they had approached the reception desk and told the staff that they wanted to check out right away. They said Sheila would be paying for the bill, and they requested access to the security box, which contained their American passports. But they were informed that Sheila had left specific instructions to not give anyone access to the box, except for her. They got into a cab and went to speak with immigration officials, who told them that lost passports had to be reported to the embassy. They were stuck. They took another cab to another hotel, the Rizzata Bali Resort, which wasn't too far from the airport. They used Sheila's credit card to pay for the room. Staff at the Rizzata Bali Resort would later tell police that they were immediately suspicious of this couple, checking into their hotel with not a bag in sight. Police issued an alert to all hotels and taxis in the area to be on the lookout for an American man named Tommy Schaefer and his girlfriend, Heather Mack. But since they had used Sheila's credit card to pay for the room, the hotel wasn't able to confirm their identities until Tommy asked resort staff for an internet voucher. The staff alerted authorities and police raided their room at about 9 p.m. while the couple was inside sleeping. They were immediately taken into custody. On the way to the police station, Tommy posted a video online from inside the police car. He said his arrest was a pig stop. Heather and Tommy were taken to the Karabakan prison, where they were held in separate cells. Two autopsies were conducted on Sheila's body, the first one in Indonesia and the second one in the United States, after sending her body there just days later. There was no doubt that she had been beaten. She had numerous cuts and bruises and fractures to her nose and her jawbone, and she also had wounds on her lower arms, consistent with defensive injuries. The cause of death was blunt force trauma that caused obstruction of airflow and asphyxiation, and the manner of death was homicide. So who were Sheila, Heather, and Tommy, and how in the world did this happen? 62-year-old Sheila Von Wies Mack and her daughter Heather were originally from the Chicago area. They were pretty wealthy and lived in a big, beautiful home in an affluent part of Oak Park, Illinois, before recently moving into a high-rise condo in downtown Chicago. Sheila had been awarded money in a lawsuit that she and her husband, James L. Mack, had filed in 2006 after James had injured his foot while they were vacationing on a cruise ship. Later that year, however, James, Sheila's husband and Heather's father, passed away from a pulmonary embolism, a blood clot in his lung, while the family was vacationing in Greece. James was 76 years old at the time, and he was a highly regarded jazz composer and producer who worked with many well-known musicians and symphonies, not only in Chicago, but internationally. Since James's death, friends said that Sheila struggled with being a single mom, raising their only child, Heather, in their home in Oak Park. When the news of Sheila's death and Heather's involvement in it hit their hometown, many people were shocked. A teenage daughter murders her mother and stuffs her body into a suitcase? But as shocking as that sounds, there were also many people who told reporters that they weren't surprised. It was no secret to their close friends and family that Sheila and her daughter had a tumultuous relationship. Neighbors said that police were frequently seen at the home and that Sheila and Heather would often call the police on each other. Reports surfaced that police had actually responded to the home 86 times since 2004. Here are just a few of those incidents. In 2010, Oak Park police responded to the home after Heather punched Sheila. Officers recommended that Heather be admitted to a mental hospital, but Sheila refused. Later that year, Sheila called police and said that Heather was stealing from their family home. And yet another incident occurred when Sheila reported that Heather punched her already broken ankle during an argument over household chores. And in 2011, things got even more violent. Sheila told police that Heather had pushed her so hard that Sheila broke her arm. She said Heather then disconnected the home phone so that she couldn't call for help. Additional reports from 2011 include more instances of Heather allegedly hitting her mother and even biting her. But even so, Sheila never pressed charges against her daughter. She told police that sending Heather to jail wouldn't help anything. But there was an incident that the Chicago Tribune reported from Heather's juvenile records. In December 2011, it shows that Heather was arrested on charges of domestic battery, aggravated battery, and battery. And later in 2012, the records show that Heather was placed on 1 year of court supervision. She was ordered to undergo counseling for anger management as part of a violence prevention program. She lived in two different juvenile facilities during 2012, but successfully completed the court-ordered programs. Friends of Sheila's told reporters that they told Sheila to kick Heather out and that she was hanging with a bad crowd, but that Sheila would always take her back. They also said that Sheila was not a fan of Heather's boyfriend, Tommy. Tommy Schaefer was a local Chicago hip-hop artist who went by the name Mr. X. On his website, he described himself as, "Standing 6'4", Tommy X was a baller in high school and was your prototypical hip-hop head his entire life." He stated that he had dropped out of college to focus on his music career. When Tommy's friends talked to reporters, they all said that they were shocked to hear that he was involved in a murder. One friend said, "He's not a monster. He's a messed up kid." Tommy and Heather hadn't been dating for very long. His ex-girlfriend, who he had been with for about a year, died in a car crash just 4 months prior to his trip to Bali. But even though Tommy and Heather hadn't been together long, they had already gotten into trouble together. A few weeks before their Bali trip, on July 23rd, the police responded to the Conrad Hotel in Chicago after Sheila told them that her daughter was using her credit card without her permission. When police arrived, they learned that Heather and Tommy had used the credit card to rack up nearly $1,000 in charges. Right before the trip, Sheila had told friends that Heather had dropped out of college, moved out of the house, and was living in a hotel. But even though their relationship was rocky, Sheila decided to take Heather on a 10-day-plus trip to Bali. It was supposed to be a mother-daughter trip. Sheila often brought her daughter along with her on extravagant vacations. Sheila's brother told reporters that Sheila had no idea that Tommy was planning on joining them. Sheila and Heather arrived in Bali on August 4th. But from all appearances, it didn't look like the trip was going so well. On August 7th, Heather posted a scenic photo from their hotel window with a cryptic caption that said, "I refuse to let someone say what I can do." On August 9th, just 3 days before she was murdered, Sheila sent out an email to her friend Elliot. She told him that Heather had run off from the resort and that she didn't know where she was. She said she discovered that Heather had visited the clinic there and had fraudulently signed Sheila's name and room number in order to get prescription pills. Sheila wrote, "She secured quite a supply, it seems. I am more frightened than ever." A couple weeks before the trip, Tommy posted on his Facebook, "Leaving August 4th for Indonesia. Might not come back." He had reportedly had issues getting his passport, so he didn't arrive on the island until August 12th. So now, there they were, Tommy and Heather in custody in Bali, and Sheila deceased. They reportedly told police that they had been taken captive at the resort by an armed gang, and that those gang members had killed Sheila. They said they had managed to escape with their lives. But police weren't buying it. They said their story was inconsistent with the facts found at the scene. They said that although Heather and Tommy told the same story when questioned, It was clearly something that they had concocted before their arrest. Police told reporters that after the armed gang story, Heather and Tommy refused to talk anymore without having attorneys present. And not just any attorneys. Heather made it clear that she wanted an American attorney, that she didn't trust anyone else. Nevertheless, police appointed an Indonesian attorney who told reporters Heather doesn't want to comment on the incident and she declined to give any information. She kept asking to be represented by a lawyer from the United States. Heather did obtain an American attorney named Michael Elkin from Chicago, who told reporters that he was helping Heather obtain better Indonesian representation. Elkin said that any allegation that Heather was involved in her mother's death would be disproven, either in the investigation or at trial. But investigators told reporters that although Heather and Tommy weren't talking to them, they were turning up plenty of evidence against them in their investigation. They said they were looking to determine whether the murder was premeditated or spontaneous. Among the evidence, they said, was surveillance footage that showed Sheila and Heather arguing in the St. Regis lobby just hours before Heather and Tommy rolled out the suitcase with Sheila's body inside. And they said they had surveillance footage that showed that the three of them were in the hotel room together where Sheila had been killed. There were also fingerprints from the murder weapon, which police believed was the handle of a fruit bowl, and fingerprints on the silver suitcase where Sheila's body had been crammed, not to mention the fact that the couple had used Sheila's credit card when they fled to the Risotto Bali resort. There were also two smaller suitcases that investigators had found in the St. Regis garden. Both suitcases contained bloody towels. So it wasn't exactly a clean scene. According to Indonesian law, investigators could hold Heather and Tommy while they conducted their investigation. The law does not require charges to be brought until the investigation has concluded and the trial begins. So Heather and Tommy were in custody, but had technically not been charged with anything. Yet. While in custody, blood tests were conducted, as well as psychiatric tests. Investigators said that they were trying to determine a motive in the case. And then came the news that Heather was pregnant. Attorney Michael Elkin confirmed the news to the press. He said that Heather was 2 months along and that Tommy was the father. He said Heather had told him that it was an ectopic pregnancy, meaning that the egg had implanted itself outside of the uterus, meaning that the baby would likely not survive. Heather said she wanted to go back to the U.S. to make sure that she received proper medical care for her ectopic pregnancy. And meanwhile, Attorney Elkin said that he was still trying to find an Indonesian lawyer who could represent Heather. He said he was given a list of attorneys, but they were either commercial or civil lawyers. He gave an example of a female attorney he said he had talked to about the case. He said he had asked her 5 different ways if Heather had been charged, and she said she didn't know. He said she was in the police station and she couldn't even find out such basic information, so I've told Heather not to discuss anything with this lawyer. One of Elkin's associates said that when she spoke with Heather on the phone, Heather told her that police refused to leave the room, even though she had asked them to. The associate claimed that Heather had initially been denied access to an attorney, which she said was quite disconcerting. Heather was also claiming, through her attorney and to reporters, that she was being treated horribly while in custody. Elkin told reporters that Heather was very distraught when he spoke with her on the phone. He said since her calls were being monitored by police, he told her to only answer yes or no to his questions. He said he asked her, "Are you being mistreated?" And she said yes. He said, "Have you been touched inappropriately?" She said yes. "Was it in the female area?" She said yes. "Was it consensual?" She said no. Elkin said that Heather also told him that she'd found what appeared to be needle marks on various areas of her body and he said that she sounded dazed and incoherent at times. And on top of all of that, both Heather and Tommy also had complaints about the food. They said they had been given a meal from KFC, which they found offensive because they said police presumed that they'd want fried chicken because they were black. Heather also complained that she wasn't getting enough water. The chief of police in Denpasar, Bali's capital, told reporters that although Heather was complaining about the food and saying that she hadn't been treated well in jail, he said that they have already given treatment that is more than normal. He said, "We give special attention to her as she is still young. This is a transition period for her." As the investigation neared its conclusion, authorities confirmed that Heather's pregnancy was a normal pregnancy and not an ectopic one, as she had claimed. In December 2014, police concluded their investigation and handed the case over to the prosecutors. The prosecutors would then either decide to proceed with the case and go to trial, or they could send it back to the police to conduct a further investigation. During this time, Tommy and Heather were reunited at the prosecutor's office. The media was there to catch their reconciliation on camera. The couple hugged and cried together when they saw each other in the holding cell. Heather sat down on a bench surrounded by other prisoners, and Tommy knelt down in front of her, touching her stomach. Heather was now 24 weeks along in her pregnancy, and she was showing. They chit-chatted and laughed together. Heather told reporters that her baby is a healthy little girl who she will name Stella, after her grandmother. While the two were awaiting trial, Heather's American attorneys were busy in Chicago. Prior to Sheila's death, Sheila had named Heather the sole beneficiary of a $1.56 million trust, and she had named her brother, Heather's Uncle William, the trustee until Heather's 30th birthday. So Heather was taking her uncle to court in order to get access to that trust fund. She wanted to use the funds to pay for her defense and was running into some roadblocks. Her uncle denied her request to release the funds, saying that he was concerned that it could be used for bribery purposes. The judge in the case, Cook County Judge Neil Cohen, however, approved that $150,000 of the trust be released to Heather so that she could use it for her attorney fees for her trial in Indonesia. But there were conditions. It was to be released in increments after the attorney provided detailed billing statements. But Heather and her attorney apparently weren't satisfied. In a letter read out loud in court, her Indonesian attorney wrote, "I am not sure if you are aware, but my client is suicidal. She is very depressed and often mentions taking her own life because she does not believe that I will remain as her attorney if my retainer fee is not met immediately." Judge Cohen called the letter emotional blackmail to extract trust money, and he reiterated the arrangement that had been set. But he also said that he would approve reasonable medical fees towards the baby's delivery. I want to stop here and take another minute to tell you a little bit more about my sponsor, Lifeway Kefir. Did you know that in addition to those delicious little dairy drinks I always talk about, they also have a variety of other products? And those other products are all gluten-free and 99% lactose-free too. In addition to kefir, they have organic kefir, frozen kefir, cups and cheese, and supplements. And they even have a line of products for kids. Just go to lifewaykefir.com/courtjunkie to check them out and to get an exclusive discount just for you court junkies. That's Lifeway, KEFIR.com/courtjunkie. Now, back to the episode. Just prior to their murder trials, Heather and Tommy's attorneys back in Indonesia argued that the prosecutor's indictment contained inaccuracies that could lead to multiple interpretations of their activities and of the crime scene. They said that the indictment raised questions of whether other people had entered Sheila's room and killed her. They also objected to prosecutors using text messages from Tommy and Heather's cell phones as evidence, saying that such messages could be prone to manipulation. They asked that the judges annul the indictment. In their response, prosecutors told the court that their indictment is in accordance with the law and asked that the court allow them to prove it through witnesses' testimonies and other evidence. The judges sided with the prosecution and denied the defense's request. In January 2015, Heather and Tommy's trials began. Tommy was charged with premeditated murder, and Heather was charged with assisting premeditated murder. If convicted, they could both be sentenced to death by firing squad. Both were being tried separately, but under the same three-judge panel, with the same prosecutors, and in the same courtroom, in the Denpasar District Court. Due to the language barrier, it's difficult to go through each and every witness, like I normally do. So instead, I'm going to go through the prosecution's narrative of the evidence that they presented, as well as the defense's, from both trials. So here's what the court heard. Prosecutor Eddie Arta Wijaya told the court that before the trip, while Heather and Tommy were still in the U.S., Heather had asked Tommy to find somebody who would kill her mother for $50,000. However, nothing happened until the trip to Bali. The court heard that Sheila and Heather arrived in Bali on August 4th, 2014, and that unbeknownst to Sheila, Tommy would be arriving 8 days later, on August 12th. Sheila had opposed Heather and Tommy's relationship and didn't know that Tommy was going to meet them in Bali. Tommy testified that he arrived in Bali a little after midnight on August 12th. He said he checked into a room at the St. Regis Resort, which Heather had booked for him online, telling him that her mother would be paying for it. He said that he and Heather then went to the beach, where they discussed how they would tell Sheila that Heather was pregnant. When they got back to the resort, Tommy said that he went up to his room. According to the prosecutor, at 3:40 a.m., Sheila went down to the St. Regis hotel lobby and frantically asked the manager if anyone had seen her daughter. As staff prepared to start searching the grounds for the missing teen, Heather appeared in the lobby. An argument between the two of them broke out, and it intensified when Sheila found out that a second room had been added to her credit card. The manager said that she was surprised and angry to find out that Tommy had checked in just 3 hours earlier. Sheila said, "So Tommy Schaefer the thief is here?" She told Heather that she would not pay for the room, and the manager said that he overheard her say that she was going to pursue credit card fraud charges when they got back to Chicago. Heather returned to her mother's room with her, and while her mother eventually went to sleep, Heather was continuously texting back and forth with Tommy, plotting how they could kill Sheila. One idea was to suffocate her with a pillow, and the other was to hit her with part of a fruit stand that Tommy had in his room. Tommy, however, testified that Heather had texted him because she said she was afraid of how her mother would react to her pregnancy, and that she told him to come to her room and to bring something heavy in case her mom got mad. Tommy told the court that he believed that Heather was in danger, and so he brought a decorative glass fruit bowl from his room for protection, which he hid under his shirt. At 8:30 a.m., Tommy went to Sheila and Heather's room. According to Tommy, Sheila flew into a rage when they told her that Heather was pregnant. He said she tried to find a knife in the suite so that she could kill their unborn baby. He said that she called Heather a prostitute and called him the N-word. Through tears, Tommy testified that he got into a physical fight with Sheila and that she squeezed his neck for about 20 to 30 seconds. He said he grabbed the fruit bowl before she could and that he hit her with it. Tommy demonstrated how he hit Sheila, and the prosecutor showed the metal bowl handles alleged to be the murder weapon to the court. Tommy said he then called 911 from his cell phone before remembering that he wasn't in the U.S. The prosecutor said that Sheila had tried to ward off the attack and to hit Tommy, but that it only made him more angry. He then hit her in the face, and as she lay on the bed, he hit her again with the steel handle before holding her hand and calling her name to check and see if she was dead. Heather testified that she did not take part in Sheila's death. She said that her mom did know that Tommy was coming and that she had given her permission to book his room. She said that Tommy beat Sheila with the bowl after Sheila had threatened her and her unborn baby. She said, "The blow was not so hard, and my mother was still resisting." She said, "I asked Tommy to stop, and then I ran into the bathroom." Heather said that when she came out of the bathroom, Tommy was on the bed, trying to revive her mother. She said he told her that she wasn't breathing, and she said she also tried to revive her, but that it didn't work. Heather said they panicked and thought about either calling the police or taking the body in a suitcase to the U.S. consulate. She said, "We panicked and didn't know what to do." Heather said she got blood on her shirt when she gave her deceased mother a final hug. She then sat on the suitcase so that Tommy could close it. The couple then did a cleanup of the rooms and tried to check out of the hotel. Hotel surveillance footage shows that the couple made several trips between their rooms and the lobby. Heather even asked for duct tape and a luggage cart. Prosecutors also presented emails to the court that showed at least one major thing wrong with Heather and Tommy's testimony. Sheila had already known about the pregnancy and had talked to friends about it. The trial was then adjourned so that the defense could present their case next. But the trial would end up being delayed just a little bit longer because Heather went into labor. Heather was taken to the hospital and gave birth via a C-section to her baby girl, whom she named Stella. Tommy was not allowed to be at the hospital for the birth. Instead, he remained in prison. Heather spent 7 days in the hospital, and when she was discharged, two of the prosecutors took her and Stella back to the prison. Tommy was then escorted by guards and allowed into Heather's cell, where he was able to hold his daughter. And according to Indonesian law, Stella can remain with Heather, even while she's in prison, until Stella turns 2 years old. The warden of the prison said that they would provide the facilities, including access to health services. When the trial resumed, Heather brought their 2-week-old daughter to the courtroom. Prosecutors rested their case after calling 22 witnesses to the stand, but not before doing something that took trial watchers by surprise. Prosecutors told the court that Tommy and Heather were guilty, but that they were requesting leniency. Chief Prosecutor Eddie Arta Wijaya said that Heather committed sadistic acts to her own mother. However, he said that they decided to be lenient because she had repeatedly expressed remorse and because she has a newborn baby. They requested that Tommy be sentenced to 18 years and Heather be sentenced to 10 if they're found guilty. That didn't mean that the panel of judges would have to take that recommendation. Tommy and Heather could still be sentenced to death by firing squad, but their chances of a more lenient sentence had just gotten better. Back home in Chicago, Sheila's sister told the Chicago Tribune that the family was extremely disappointed with Indonesia's criminal justice system. She noted that the prosecutor's recommended sentence was a total injustice. When the defense teams had their turn, Heather's attorney appealed to the court, saying that Heather has lost the love of a mother. He also said that neither Heather nor Tommy had planned to kill Sheila. He said Heather still regrets what happened and that she feels sad over her mother's death. Heather's attorney then attacked the prosecution's case, saying that not one of the 22 witnesses delivered a clear account of Heather's actions on the day of the incident. He pleaded with the court to take into account the social and psychological conditions of the defendant in deciding the verdict and to hand down the lightest possible sentence. Tommy's attorney argued that the spontaneous, emotional nature of the killing proved that Tommy had not planned on killing Sheila. He said that Tommy had just been trying to protect Heather and their unborn baby after he said Sheila had threatened to kill her. Tommy's attorney also said that the 18-year recommended term was too much, since he said the prosecutors did not prove premeditation. Both the attorney for Heather as well as the attorney for Tommy said that their clients' young ages and feelings of remorse should mean lighter sentences. On April 21st, 2015, the unanimous verdicts from the three-judge panel came down. Heather was found guilty of being an accessory to the murder of her mother, and she was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Regarding Heather, the verdict read, "Her newborn baby badly needs a mother's love and breastfeeding." Tommy was found guilty of murder and received an 18-year term. Afterwards, Tommy told reporters, "Although I do take full responsibility for my actions, I'm not a murderer." And just when you think they've been convicted, they've been sentenced, that's probably the end, right? Well, not exactly. Believe it or not, there's still a lot to cover. There's a third arrest made in the case, meaning that Tommy and Heather may not have exactly committed the murder all by themselves. And some damning text messages between Heather and Tommy just prior to the murder are released to the public. And could a federal investigation be underway in the United States? I'll cover all of that and more when I release part two next week. A special thank you to all of you for listening. I also want to give a shout out to some more of my Patreon supporters: Jennifer, Sue, Gina, Bethany, and Sarah Catherine. Thank you so much for donating to this podcast. If you'd like to donate, you can donate as little as $1 a month and get early, ad-free access to these episodes. Just go to courtjunkie.com/support. I also want to thank a listener of this show, Mia Ringspar, who makes the most amazing gluten-free seed crackers. Mia reached out to me and told me that I need to try her crackers, and she was kind enough to send me some. And she was right. They're pretty great. Just go to miaringspar.com to check them out. I'll also add the link in the show notes. And lastly, I have a podcast recommendation for you, because I know how frustrating it is when you have nothing new to listen to in your feed. If you haven't yet checked out They Walk Among Us, I recommend that you do. It's a bi-weekly UK true crime podcast that covers a broad range of cases, from the sinister to the surreal. They've been dominating the UK charts, and for good reason. So make sure to check them out. That's They Walk Among Us. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.